Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 8th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Are you still there, buddy?
Nothing for me?
Nothing for you. I figured, you know what? You were coming back from Vegas. You were going to do all the talking. You probably had a great time out there while I was here freezing in Florida. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to let him run with it. And then, of course, you said the same thing about me, and there was dead silence.
Well, I tell you, I am back now, and I got a question for you, Chris, because you were here in Florida when I was out in Vegas, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Were you the one that didn't pay Mother Nature her electric bill? Because she turned the heat off while I was gone, and I can't handle this.
Yeah, I have an entire family who just, everybody I talk to, they're like, we didn't move here for this cold. And I'm like, I know, I'm tired of hearing it. It's just, I'm tired of wearing pants. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man, but I had a great time out in Vegas, and I got a couple stories here for you.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more than two.
Okay, more than two?
Okay.
Oh, is couple, does that mean two?
Couple means two. I think you're going to have a few.
A few.
Perhaps a plethora.
Is few a three or more, or
yeah,
is few three?
I think it's three or more.
Okay, all right, so a few. I got a few stories for you then. All right, well, I know you don't like the non-poker stories, right?
Well, it's not that I don't like them. I love them. I just want to have another podcast with you that's called Non-Anti-Up.
Non-Anti-Up. All right, well, here, I'm going to try to work in some poker lingo in this first story.
Okay.
Kind of trick you into thinking that it's a poker story, even though it's really not. How's that?
All right, cool.
All right, here we go. I had some bad beats out there, Chris.
I'm
sure. I know people hate to hear bad beat stories, but I don't care. All right, here's my first bad beat. I turned the wife on to sports betting out there. We did quite well, right? We won on the Rose Bowl. We won on the Packers. We won on even Boise State, of all teams. I also put a bet down on USF. You know, our mighty Bulls here in South Florida.
Right.
Went to cash the winning ticket after they triumphantly won. And the little lady said, it's not a winner. What do you mean it's not a winner? They won 27-3, and I had points. And it's not a winner. I looked at it. The little jerk-tard behind the counter gave me South Carolina.
Oh, my God.
Not South Florida. And I did not check my slip before leaving the window as I'm instructed to. And boom. Out $70.
Oh, $70?
Bad beat number one.
Oh.
Bad beat number two, I was at the MGM playing poker. See, it's poker.
Hey,
I worked
poker
right into the poker there.
Yeah, excellent, excellent.
Flop quads. Only done it 12 times in my life. And, of course, it's at a room that doesn't have any high hands.
Of course.
So I had to be happy winning the pot and getting action all the way to the end.
Oh, that's good. Was it no limit or limit?
Limit, of course.
Limit, of course. I'm just making sure.
All right. And then the ultimate bad beat of the trip, Chris. We went to see the little Price is Right taping there in Vegas. You know, it's not the Drew Carey show. It's like the little – they have like a show there you go on and you can bid on, you know, blenders and crap like that.
Yeah.
Stuff that no one wants, right? And at the end, they draw two names to come up and do the showcase showdown. And they trot out a bunch of other worthless crap and a car. and you have to bid on it. And if you come within $100, Chris, you walk out with everything.
Yep, just like on the real show.
Exactly. I whispered to Laura when I was going through the stuff. I'm like, I think this package is worth $16,050. The actual retail price, Chris?
Uh-huh.
$16,100.
Oh, my God.
$50 off and under two. I would totally want it had the computer picked my name.
Wow.
I would have won a Nissan Versa, which, you know, I guess is a car, and a bunch of other stuff. Well, $50 off.
Wow. I wish you had one, because I think the Nissan Versa probably has a better rearview mirror in that car.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have backed into my car last week.
Right. Yeah. It actually, you're right. It probably would have. And the thing is, if you back a Versa into a car, I mean, big deal.
Exactly. It's a Versa.
I'll just go back to Walmart and buy another one, you know?
Wow.
All right. I'll move on to the good poker stories here. But one more thing, too, because I remembered. You were in my thoughts when I did this because I know how much you like to get plowed with liquor at night.
Yeah.
And totally forget everything you've done. And, you know, it's kind of new to me. It doesn't really happen to me very often, but, uh-huh. You know, I was out in Vegas and having a good time. And I was at the $2 craps table. Actually, this was in Laughlin where you can actually get a $2 craps table, right?
Right.
Played all night, did quite well. Woke up the next morning and I'm like, I can't remember even taking my money off the table. And then you panic, you know, you wake up at 7 o'clock, and I got the residual drunkenness. You know all this, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't even remember picking my chips up off the table. Maybe I did that, but did I actually go to the cage and turn them in for money? Oh, my God, did I do that but leave the money at the cage? Oh, my God, how did I get home?
And you were alone doing this? Like, Laura wasn't with you?
Laura, I already took Laura home earlier, and I went back out. You know, hey, $2 crap table. The action was good, right?
Yeah.
So I'm freaked out, and, you know, how are you ever going to know, right?
Yeah.
So I get up, and I look at my wallet, and I am anal like this. I arrange my wallet into sequential denominations.
Yes.
And at the very end was two 20s and a 10. And I know I cashed out for $250 at the craps table. So, whew! Almost had a bigger bad beat there.
Oh, man.
It's all your fault. You know, I don't normally drink like that.
I know. I'm a bad influence.
You are. You're terrible. All right, let's talk about some poker here. We went to see the new Aria. I don't know. When you were out there, they were still doing the construction of the city center, right?
Right. They were almost done, but they were still doing it.
Yep. It just opened December 16th, and I stopped in to, you know, gawk a little bit. And the poker room, I think it's like 29 tables, I heard. Very, very nice. They got one of those little private room kind of things, you know, like the Bobby's room at the Bellagio. And real stylish to kind of meet the whole thing. And here's the other thing. It was packed, Chris.
Uh-huh.
This casino opened 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Packed.
I believe it. Wait, are you waiting for me to, like, say, no, I don't believe you?
I mean, I'm just going to have to pull this whole show by... Drag the wagon myself on the show.
Well, I believe you. I mean, it's a brand new facility, and it's the city center. I mean, I would expect a lot of people to be there, even 2 weeks later.
I was surprised because, you know, there's just so – poker is so saturated out there now.
Yeah.
Bunch of new rooms and stuff that I just, you know, I don't know. It was like on a Monday, too. It wasn't even, you know, a real day.
Monday's not – Monday's like the stepchild of all the days.
Exactly. It's kind of like an appetizer day, you know? To warm you up to the real days. But very nice. So if you guys are out there, check out Aria. And, you know, I only played the one little session in Vegas. Wife and I did a lot of the other kind of touristy stuff, you know, and imbibed in some alcohol, New Year's Eve and stuff. But I played just the 1 hour at the MGM Grand where I flopped the quads. But I do want to mention this, too. You know, they have a little card there, you know, and I've been using that. You know, I use these cards everywhere.
Yeah.
Give it to the guy, and I never cash in the stuff in. Because, you know, in Vegas, I'm only there a couple times a year. I never think I add up to anything, right? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So the wife and I, we decided to go down to Emeralds and treat ourselves to a nice dinner. And so I'm leaving the MGM poker room, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see if I have any comps. I might as well use it. I mean, this dinner's going to cost me two big bills. I might as well shave whatever off I can, right?
Yeah.
I asked the little guy at the stand at the poker room, I'm like, hey, is the poker room card and the MGM card the same? Because I know the card they gave me, it says poker room on it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know whether they linked or not. He's like, oh, yeah, they're the same. I'm like, all right, cool. So I went down, waited a half an hour, Chris, in the line at the Players Club just to find out where they're having comps.
Uh-huh.
The lady's like, what is it again that you want? I'm like, I was just checking to see if I have any comps. She's like, you don't have anything.
What?
I don't have anything? And she's like, what do you play? I'm like, I play poker. She's like, oh, poker is completely separate. Like, what? So meanwhile, you know, Laura's over at Emerald's trying to hold our table. So now I got to run back over to the poker room. And I get there and I see the little kid that told me that they're separate or not separate. And I'm like, dude, they're separate. He's like, no, it's the same card, man. I'm like, I'm just telling you. I was in line over there for half an hour. She says, it's not the same. So another guy sits down and he's like, no, you guys are talking about two different things. It's the same card, but they're tracked differently.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, well, thanks. That's what I wanted to know. So he types in his little computer, comes up. I have $17.98 in comps. I'm like, all right, I'll take it all. And he's like, yeah, you can use these at most restaurants in the complex, blah, 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 blah. All right, I totally skipped over the most, right?
Right.
So he gives me a little slip, and it's got a list of restaurants. And I'm like, me? Except I didn't say, I said something else. And the guy's like, problem? And I'm like, Emeralds isn't on here. He's like, yeah, that's the one restaurant that's not. So I'm like, well, what am I going to do with this now? Can you put it back into my account? And he's like, yeah, I can put it back in your account.
Oh, my God.
How's that? I picked the one freaking restaurant in the entire MGM family that I can't use my comps for.
Well, at least you read the comp list, unlike your sports betting ticket.
Yes, that is true.
And see, didn't sit down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then after a couple days in Vegas, we got away. Went down to the little resort town of Laughlin, about 2 hours south. My aunt and uncle live down there. And, you know, it's kind of a low rollers kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And so I've been down there a couple times, but I haven't really played. Just popped in to say hi to him. We actually stayed 2 nights down there. So I was doing some research and I had good friends at PokerNews.com and found some reviews from like 07. And they said pretty much every room, the game choice is $2 to $6 spread limit.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, wow, really? And I'm like, well, 2 years old. Maybe the no limit craze got there. I'm going to be screwed. And I get down there. Nope. Almost every room there, 2-6 spread limit, Chris.
Wow.
There's only one no-limit game going in the entire town that I saw.
That's incredible.
It is, isn't it?
So, now, did you enjoy that? Because I know, like, we have 2-5 here and you hate it. So, what did that make a difference?
You know, I love the spread limit, actually. I think the spread limit's a far superior game to fixed limit.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you can whip in and teach flops cheaply and then, you know, pound away at people when you have a good hand. So I had fun playing the 2-6. I really like it. I like the fact that I could go in any casino down there and get a 2-6 spread limit.
That's wild.
I mean, I'd rather like 2-10 or something like that. But, you know, I'm not going to get too picky. But, yeah, I mean, isn't it crazy that I found this little area of the world that supposedly no one has heard of No Limit?
Well, that's because they don't get the Travel Channel.
Right, exactly.
So they don't have cable, so they don't even know about the poker boom yet. Hey, let me ask you, what were the rooms like? Were they nice?
Yeah, it depends on the room. Harrah's, of course, put a lot of money into the room, and it kind of looks like most Harrah's rooms. It's got the little, you know, world champ posters up there and stuff.
Yeah.
The really cool thing about the rooms there, most of them, because Laughlin is on the Colorado River, so all the casinos are lined up along the river.
Right.
And almost all the poker rooms overlook the river. They had, like, glass windows on the side.
Huh.
So, you know, during the day, it was pretty cool. At night, of course, you can't see anything, but... But, yeah, they were kind of nice and, you know, kind of locals kind of type rooms. And but you got to like the 2-6 spread limit. And the one place that I went that did not have the 2-6 spread limit was Harrah's. They had a 3-6 fixed game. I'm like, all right, that's fine. And I got there late at night. And, I mean, I'll just play a little. Laura loses a couple hundred in slots. And so I've got an etiquette dilemma came up, Chris. And as these things come up, I always think of you.
Yeah, because you know I'm the king of etiquette.
Exactly, because I'm like, gosh, I can't wait to ask Chris about this to see what he thinks. All right, and I'm being serious here. I'm not being funny, though. It's going to be a funny story.
It's always funny when you tell it.
All right, so we sit down. Again, it's late. It's like, I don't know, midnight or something. I sit down. There's one seat at the table. I sit down. And immediately this kid in the 9th seat, the kid in the 10th seat, kind of a gregarious kind of talking, laughing, having a good time kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
And I sit down and he's like, hey, we're doing a red flop, black flop for $3. And, you know, and the weird thing is here, the Harris, they have $3 chips.
Yeah.
It was a 3-6 game, so which is really weird because the game plays bigger with the dollar chips.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they do that, but so I've got this little stack of $3 chips. He's like, you know, hey, we're doing red flop, black flop for $3. You want in? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'll be a nice guy. I'll have a little fun. I'll play red flop, black flop. And he's like, all right, cool. So it turns out it's just me and another guy. So it's just the two of them. And then I sit down. Now he's playing double up against me and this other guy.
Right.
And I get red. He gets black, right?
Right.
And 9 in a row, Chris, go to him.
No.
First 9 go to him.
Oh, my God.
I'm down 27 smackers, and I haven't even played a hand yet.
Holy cow.
Isn't that unreal?
Wow.
I'd almost say, like, the coin was rigged, but it wasn't a coin. It was the cards.
Jeez.
And once we did a double or nothing with the guy because he's like, hey, do you want to do a double or nothing on this one? And I'm looking down, and I have two blacks in my hand. And the other guy, I think, had two blacks in his hand. And we both all said, sure. And, of course, it comes black. So, really, I lost 10 bets just like that. All right? So, here's the thing. And I don't know how long this kid has been here and how long this has been going on. I mean, I just sat down, right?
Yeah.
At one point, one guy at the other end of the table said, you know, hey, guys, I don't mind if you guys are doing this thing. But it's slowing the game down. So let's just, as long as the game's not slowing down, let's keep going. And I'm like, oh, man. I mean, I wasn't trying to tick anybody off, right? I was just trying to be a nice guy and having fun with this guy.
Yeah.
But the tendency starts yawning at the guy. He's like, dude, it's not slowing down the game at all. I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, it's slowing down the game. You know, we're playing poker. You guys are, you know, throwing money back and forth across the table, slowing the game down. So then the kid's like, oh, I don't think it is. But, you know, whatever. So... finally, so the next guy next to him gets up and leaves. He's like, hey, I came here to play poker. I'm leaving.
Oh, my
God. And so the Tensi guy goes, dude, relax. I don't know what the problem is. We're playing poker. He's like, no, we're not. You guys are doing your little red flop, betting, red, green, whatever. I don't know what it is, but it's not poker. And leaves.
Wow. All right? Wow.
So, and then his wife is at the table. She plays one more hand, and then she gets up. And the kid in the Tennessee is like, oh, ma'am, did I offend you too? And she's like, you know, I understand, but, you know, I did come here to play poker. I didn't want to play this, so I'm going to leave too. So she leaves. And then there was a situation that came two hands later where the flop came out, and, of course, it was black like it always is. And the other guy that was kind of on my team kind of threw his fist down, right?
Right.
And then flipped the $3 to the kid. And the guy at the end of the table said, hey, that's a check. Because then the guy tried to bet. He's like, you checked. He's like, no, I didn't check. I was, you know, I was upset that the flop came my way and I was paying that. You know, we've been doing it all night. He's like, no, I want the floor to come over. I think you checked. So then the guy in the tent seat starts getting on this guy's case. He's like, you didn't check. We've been doing all this. Relax. Blah, 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 blah. So it turned into this huge ruckus. And at the end, the only people left were the three of us.
Oh, jeez.
So the game collapsed over the stupid red flop, black flop crap thing going on.
Oh, man.
All right, now, I didn't really care because it was late and I'm getting ready to leave. But, you know, I did feel bad because, you know, I'm looking at the manager there. He's dealing with all these complaints on these players. Though I guess he was encouraging this kid to do it.
Really?
And the dealers were fine with it and everything. So I don't think the room had a problem with it. But, you know... I know you watch this kind of stuff on your high-stakes poker shows and stuff like that.
Right.
Do people get upset about that kind of stuff? I mean, I know it's different with pros because they probably know it going in, but...
Well, when I watch it on television, everyone there is fine with it, and they don't ever say anything. And I know that they stopped it when they were doing it on Poker After Dark because it seemed like the audience just was rebelling against it, and it did slow down the game itself. You know, it's weird. If they're all fine with it playing slow, then that's fine. But if someone isn't, then I can see people complaining about it. I don't know if it slowed down your game. Obviously, I wasn't there. But on TV, it gets to be real annoying because they're sitting there and that's all they're talking about is, I'm on for doubles here, and oh, I see that, I see that, I see this. And they're talking about what they saw and what they didn't do. Meanwhile, it's their time to act. And they do take a while. So on those kind of prop bets where they have, it's so intricate, Right. It does definitely slow down the game, but almost everybody at the table is in the props, so
yeah,
they're all understanding, you know?
Well, let me ask you this. If you sit down at a table and a couple clowns at the other end are doing this stuff, at what point do you get upset about it, or do you get upset about it?
Well, I mean, if it's between them and they're just passing their chips to each other and they're talking about it and it's just two guys fooling around and, you know, it's just like anybody else betting on the dogs here at any one of our casinos and they're talking to the runner and everything and, you know, I mean, I don't really think of it that big of a deal. If it gets, like, you guys are doing it three-handed, so it's starting to get a lot of people involved. And if you guys are starting to argue or talk about, you know, or... I mean, for me, it seems like red and black. It's not that difficult to decipher. You know,
yeah.
If the flop came red or black, you pay, and that's all there is to it. Whereas, you know, other props are like, well, I got the two of diamonds, and
right, right.
But no, I don't think I would get ticked off. I mean, we're there to play poker, and but if you want to make it more exciting for yourself, I mean, guys make the straddle, and you know, and that some people have to say, what's that? Is that a straddle? And people have their headphones on, and hey, what did he say? How much is the bet? And that slows, you know, I mean, all these things slow the game down. So if you're gonna be ticked off about that is a lot of other things that you could be ticked off about. So,
right.
I would never said no, yes, but that's just me. I'm not a gambler. You like to gamble and stuff. I'd have never even done it in the first place. But
well, it turns out that this kid in the Tennessee was the instigator, and he's a no limit player. And I think he was in town and just realized that he couldn't find a no limit game.
Oh.
So he was trying to make the 3-6 a little more exciting for him. But at one point too. You know, in the middle of all these, and he went on he started off on a good run, and he ended up continuing on a good run with it, too.
Right.
At one point, I'm like, and I turned around. Now, mind you, this TV in the room is behind me, so I'm not watching it, but I can kind of see it out of the corner of my eye, but I'm not really watching and paying attention to the game. So I got upset, and I'm like, oh, my God, this kid, he keeps getting these black flops. I turn around, and who is on the TV, Chris? Lauren Finkelstein.
Oh, my God.
And our Andy Up patch. The one time. Then I turn around and kind of look, and it's a World Series coverage. There's Lauren in his bright orange shirt and his little Andy Up patch on. And I'm like, wow! I flew all the way to Laughlin, and Lauren's here hanging out with me. Of course, he's playing for, you know, $8 million, and I'm playing for $3 on red flops.
That's pretty cool. I know. I've seen him on TV a few times. He's got that cool peach-colored shirt on and... or whatever color that is, and yeah, it's like, wow, I never get used to seeing our friends and listeners on television. It's pretty wild.
All right, well, I could go on and on about Vegas, but those are the highlights, so I'm glad to be back, and of course, next week, we'll be back with Fast and I are leaving tomorrow to Biloxi.
Wow.
And, you know, we always have stories with that, especially when I rent a car, which we are in New Orleans driving over, so we'll see whether I have any problems crossing the Louisiana-Pacific border.
Well, you know, of course, while you travel, I stay home. But I decided to go down to Sarasota and see our good friend Sam Minatello and play in his afternoon tournament. And it wasn't really a big tournament as far as buy-in. It was like a 35 rebuy or something. But, you know, they had like 150 players, so it was a pretty good turnout. And I have to ask you, you know, if ignorance is bliss, then how are you expected to beat it? If somebody is just totally ignorant to everything around them, including how to play poker properly. How are you supposed to beat these people? And here's what I'm saying, okay? I had a pretty decent first table, and I had a pretty nice run, and I was way above average when we got moved to the second table. Now, I'm reminding you, too, this is the middle stage of the tournament, okay? So it's not early on now, so where you're trying to get a lot of chips, and it's not later where it's just, you know, all in flop call kind of crap, you know, where it's just a coin flip thing. This is like in the middle stages of the tournament where you're allowed, you have fold equity, you're allowed to lay a hand down when you're faced with a re-raise and a four bet and all that stuff. So, I have a question for you. This one guy at this one table, okay, he thought in his head that he was making all of these moves mathematically correct and,
right.
and all this other stuff. So, here's what happened, okay, and of course this guy knocks me out, all right, using this unbelievably terrible logic. One hand, when I first get to the table, I didn't play many hands, but when I first got to the table, the blinds were around 800 and 1600 with a 200 ante, and it folds to him, okay? He's in the small blind. He raises to 5,000 in the small blind, which is about a normal size raise.
Okay.
But the big blind only has 5,000 left, okay? And he's already got 1800 committed to this pot. So the guy calls and turns over pocket sixes. Well, the guy who raises the small blind sheepishly turns over 8 deuce and says, oh, I was just trying to steal, you know? And I'm like, dude, he has to call you with any 2 cards. And then he says, I'm saying this to myself. I didn't say anything to him yet. And then he says, he spikes an 8 now on the flop and knocks the guy out, okay?
Oh, man, of course.
After the guy leaves, he turns to the table and says, how does he call there? The guy had pocket sixes, 1800 in the pot, and the guy raises to 5 grand without even looking at his stack, has a pocket pair, and the guy says, how does he call there? The whole table just berated him. They were just like, dude, we call with any paint, any 2 cards, we got to call there. And so he's going on and on. He's like, no, I don't know, pocket sixes, you know. And I'm like, you raised with 8 deuce off. I mean, it was just ridiculous. So I'm all right. Later on, same blind level. I'm still not playing a hand yet, or at least against him. He's under the gun. He raises to 5K. Now a guy shoves for 20,000. Everyone folds. It gets back to him. He calls instantly with 4-4.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Guy turns over pocket jacks. He's got he's got 2 outs to win. On the river.
Hits both of them, right?
On the river, though, he does hit a 4, knocks out the guy with the jacks. You know what he says? He says, I had to call. And it was for almost his entire stack at that moment. So now he's lost a few pots because he's done some more stupid crap. Now he's down to about 26K, 28K, something like that. I have 28,000 in front of me, something like that. Now the blinds are 1 in 2,000. This is the hand that knocks me out. He's in middle position and he raises to 5,500. Okay, so already he's like not raising enough, but right. I have 26K in front of me and I'm in the small blind and I get jack jack. Now the guy next to me is short stacked.
Fold.
Yeah, fold. I know, because you know the outcome. But so I re-raise. I figured a re-raise with my stack would be about 17K. I only have 25, 26. That's like 3/4 of my stack. If I'm going to re-raise, I might as well shove.
Right.
I shove. He calls almost instantly, says, I got the right odds. I got to call. Turns over king-queen off. And the pot was 36,000. He had to call 21K, which would have been like almost his whole stack. He would have had like 3 or 4K left because he had lost a few pots after that big run. With king queen off, and he flopped a king, and I was out, and I was, you know, whatever, because I wanted to get a lot of chips, and you know it seemed like the right play to me. Maybe I could have just called, saw the king, and folded, and still had like 18, 20K, whatever. But I just didn't feel like that was the right move. I felt like the range of hands this guy showed, pocket fours, 8 deuce, and then even king queen was not a good hand.
Right.
I mean, it's a raising hand when you're first in the pot, middle position. That I agree with. When you get re-raised all in, and you have king-queen, what are you hoping to see? Exactly the 2 cards I had. Otherwise, he's screwed. He has to race me, or he's dominated. I mean, that's just a terrible call, and I don't know how to beat that. I don't know what I'm supposed to do there. I mean, I should have played red and black with him and gotten some money out of him somehow.
That might be what I suggest.
All right, well, you know, I was playing well, and you know, I'm not a big tournament player anymore, so... You know, when I'm playing well and I'm running well, and I feel like now I'm not like in 50th place and they were paying 15. I mean, if I get 50, 60,000 there, you know, I think I can win that thing or at least make the final table. And that just, it just rubs me wrong when people don't know what they're doing and I don't know what else to do. I mean, I wanted to call there because I figured he'd probably have like pocket eights again or something.
Yep.
But I still lose. So I guess I just played it.
Yeah. You get what you ask for.
Yeah, I guess. Boom.
Sometimes sometimes the flop's black, sometimes the flop's red, Chris.
All right, well, between our 2 rants, the show's running long, so I'm real interested in seeing what you got piled up on the news desk.
Yeah, it's an interesting news desk because I've been out of town and I got little dribs and drabs here, but it's pretty interesting. We'll start with this. Washington Wizards, Gervais Crittenton and Gilbert Arenas have reportedly pulled guns on each other over a $25,000 poker debt, Crittenton says Arenas owes him. Bluff Magazine reports, Arenas says the two have been friends and remain friends. That's nice.
You know, the minute I heard this story, I thought... That's me and Scott. We need to get some Sig Sauers and you know some gun other guns, you know, Colts or whatever, and then just all right, you want to run that story in the magazine? Pow! I'll drop a cap in your ass. Oh man!
Oh man! Yeah, well, you know, you still do owe me that $25,000.
Yeah, I know. I was so hoping you'd bring this up on the show. I was going to open. If you didn't go to Vegas, we were opening with this somehow. All right, well, another pairing that I didn't see coming. Tony G and Isildur won. Apparently, are hooking up. Isildur won, that Swedish poker phenom who took the online high-stakes circuit by storm by winning and losing millions. Might be getting backed by Poker News' Tony G, according to Pocket Fives and some other news reports. And that shocks me, because I'm like, do we even know who this guy is?
But it's, you know, I love it. I love this fact that we really don't know anything much about this guy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
And, you know, everybody's trying to find out, and, you know, I kind of like the little Mr. Man. He's kind of like D.B. Cooper in the poker world.
That's cool.
All right, then finally, Justin Bonomo is no longer a member of the Bodog team. OnlineCasinos.com reports the only remaining pros on Bodog's roster, Evelyn Ng and David Williams, after Jean-Robert Ballon left the team last year.
Yeah, we got an email, actually, from his agent today telling us, you know, here's the reason and whatever. And it was just, you know, just a different opinion or whatever it was. Or he needs a better site. So he said he's working on another deal. I read his blog post, and we don't know who it is yet, but I'm sure we'll find out pretty soon. So, hey, yeah, you know, nice. You got to do what's best for you. It's business now.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be nice if he joined our good friends at PokerStars.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the Team PokerStars pros.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're listening, Justin. Huh?
Are you? Well, what I'm listening to is the hotline ringing. It's 813-448-1120. It's ringing in my ear, man. We gotta answer it. And if you use that number and leave a message for us and we use it on the show, we'll give you something cool. So this comes from David B.
Hi, guys. This is David B. or on the forums, Crackpot1. And I wanted to comment about one of the items you had on your last show, the guy who was complaining how he was taking all these bad beats. Now, obviously, I don't know him, and I don't know what his situation is, but I see this frequently in the games that I play, including one I just played Monday night, where a guy would sit there, he would flop a great hand, and then he would check and check. And the opponent would get there, and then he'd complain about a bad beat. You got a bet at him, or they're going to sit there and draw, and then that's a lot more likely to hit the bad beat. So I see this all the time, people complaining about bad beats when they have done nothing to prevent it. And I just wonder if that's the situation with the guy who wrote it.
All right, you know, I like this call, David, because I'm sick, and I'm sure your little buddy at Sarasota is the same way, Chris, that, you know, you whine and complain about bad beats, but, you know, you have to look back, and maybe you could have done something to prevent it.
Yeah.
It's not always black and white, of course, I know. There's, you know, shades of gray and everything, but, you know, if you get pocket aces, it's not a bad beat if you don't win the hand.
No, absolutely. And
lots of things can happen. So, you know, if you slow play and then someone catches up, boom. It's not a bad beat.
No.
Just bad play.
Absolutely. Slow playing, definitely. And the other thing, too, is sometimes, you know, it's like if hindsight is 20/20. You know, if you didn't shove, if you just called and then shoved, or if you just called and then folded to a bet, you know, you'd have your stack and... You know, it's so, but how are you supposed to know that, you know? So there's so many different pitfalls, you know, to bad beats that you got to try to prevent them the best way you can. And you got to get better at reading your opponents. That if they're drawing, you got to bet them out, you know? I agree with that. So what's he win?
All right, now, a brand new item on the swag shelf this week, Chris, from our good friend Jason over at the J Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Andy Up. He is going to send David B. an uncut sheet of those cards.
Those are cool.
You have one, I have one. Our good friend Dr. Frank has one. They're pretty neat.
Yeah, frame it and put it in your poker room, man. It looks pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet. Pretty cool. All right, so Dave, send us your address, and we will get that swag out to you. And we can also give swag out to people who send us an item in the mailbag.
That's right.
And this week, the mailbag question comes from Nick Keen. And he says he's been playing online poker for a long time now, but has only been tracking his results for a few months. I now play mostly micro-stakes, no-limit cash games instead of tournaments, but both cash games and tournaments in my range have a 10% rake. He says, I have a profit of $30 after paying a total rake of $170, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to be in the amount in the black, but it's still sad to see just how much of my buy-in is being gobbled up by the site. Apart from moving way up in stakes, where the rake is a smaller percentage, do you have any suggestions about what I can do to cut down on the effective rake I'm paying?
Well, you know, the first thing I want to know is when he says he pays total rake of 170, does that include all the hands he didn't win? You know, because that's true. You know, I mean, any pot you're in that you lose some of the rake, you can't really... I mean, it's almost as if he's making a comparison to, I would have $130 more, $170 more in my pocket if I could adjust the rake. Or, and I don't know if that's what he's asking, because really, everybody pays rake, even when pots you lose. So I don't know if there's really anything from that perspective you can do. I mean, there are other rake back programs and sites and stuff too, but I don't even know. Really, I don't get into any of that, so I'm hoping that that's what he's asking us. I don't know.
Yeah, and I steered him toward our great forum at antiettmagazine.com/forum to post that, because I know a lot of the nation is using rakeback programs. You know, I don't use them. Like you said, you don't use them. But that's one way of getting the rakeback at those small stakes. But you know, again, that's part of the kind of the problem with being micro limits or a small stakes player is, you know, you kind of get screwed by the man, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It costs just as much to run a table, whether it's online or live, for a low-stakes game as it does a high-stakes game. And, you know, the casino's got to make their money, so this is kind of what happens. So I guess the ultimate goal is to finally move up when you're comfortable to those higher stakes where the rake is a little bit less. But in the meantime, I don't know.
Well, so, you know what? If you're not comfortable in the higher stakes, be happy that you're only losing rake. Because if you're uncomfortable when you move to the higher stakes, you're going to lose more money in just playing.
Than
you are to the rake. So
absolutely,
I wouldn't make that move too quickly. You know, just if you're happy in the micro limits, but you're just unhappy with the rake, it's something you have to grin and bear. And if you're getting better at the game, then try an incremental move up. But don't move up too fast and too high, because you might lose a lot more there than you would just playing rake. So
absolutely. Well, and Nick, we got a great way of helping you cut down on that rake here. How about a $10 staking package from getastake.com that will be rake free. So enjoy that $10, and maybe you can move it up into a higher bankroll.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
What was your favorite moment in Chicago, Scott, when we were up there? What was your favorite moment?
Wow, my favorite moment. I'm going to have to say eating the mashed potatoes. I know that's exactly what you thought I was going to say, so I probably should have been a little more creative. But no, it's the mashed potatoes.
All right. Well, I tell you what, that's a close second for me. I think first was hanging out with Dennis Phillips and getting to talk to him. And just do a little interview with him for the show. Just such a great guy. And a few surprises, too, in the interview. And, you know, I tried like hell to get the total amount of how much it cost him to fly all those people out there. But he wasn't giving it up, man. He was just like at the poker table. He doesn't give any information up. So, anyway, here's my interview with him when we went out to Windy City Poker Championship finale, which he attended and played in. And enjoy. Can you explain to me what your life has been like since that finish in 2008?
It's been about 18 months now, and honestly, I don't think I've stopped smiling the entire time. It's been a whirlwind, doing things that I never would have dreamt possible. I can now count as friends people like Albert Pujols and a number of others. Traveled to places I've never even heard of before. Down into Latin America 4 different times, into Europe 6 times. You know, me and Monte Carlo, what's going on here? It's crazy. But and it's all good. The poker world is such a good group of people.
Yeah.
They do so much work in charity. They are so friendly. They will welcome you into the fold as long as you're a good guy. And it's pretty awesome. It's been absolutely fabulous.
Now, a lot of truck drivers, a lot of times they pick that as a career for the solitude. And now that you're a famous poker player, do you know, solitude's probably the last thing that you have now. How hard is it to go from that sort of, you're alone in your truck and you're doing what you got to do, to everyone wants to talk to you, everyone knows you kind of thing?
It is kind of wild. To come to the event in Chicago that we did up here, instead of the option of flying, which I've done a tremendous amount of flying last year, I decided to drive because 4 hours in a car with nobody else sounded really, really good. So you're absolutely right. I can't go into a McDonald's now without somebody recognizes me. But again, it's for the most part, it's really good. People just want to talk to me for a second. They always got a question. If I hear that ace, king, ace, queen question any more times, that's just part of it. And, it's fun. And everybody's, for the most part, they really, mean well, and they just, want to talk for a second.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the driving for a truck, and I heard that you were thinking about buying the company that you used to work for. Did you actually do that?
Yeah, it's we're finishing the paperwork and everything like that, but yeah, I am buying the company down there. These are guys I've known for years and years. The economy, of course, is the way it is. The two owners right now, one's about 79 and the other one 80, and they wanted to get out of the business, but they wanted to make sure the business stayed together.
Nice.
And, didn't. Because they have guys that worked there for 30, 35 years.
Yeah.
They were afraid if they sold it, it'd kind of get dispersed and all this other. And we came to terms, and my friends are going to have a job, and I've got a good business, and they know that it's going to stay together, and it's kind of a win-win-win situation.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, anyone who knows you're a Cardinals fan, St. Louis Cardinals, of course. What was the experience like throwing out the first pitch at Busch Stadium?
It was.
and how did that come about?
Some friends of friends. I mean, I've made a lot of acquaintances down there now. I've been involved in a lot of different charities. I've given and helped Albert Pujols and his Pujols Family Foundation charity, which is absolutely awesome. I can talk about that in a minute if you want. But they said, yeah, if you want to come. They gave me a jersey with my name on the back of it, the whole bit. You walk out in the middle of 40,000 people. You don't get a chance to warm up or anything like that. The guy said, look, you just go out 20 feet and lob it back in if you want. And I said, no. This is the only time this is ever going to happen. I don't care. I went out there and I, tried to pretend like I was 20 and heave it. And, of course, I split the plate with a ball. It rolled right over it. There you go. But it was fun. I mean, it was a blast. And now everybody just gives me a hard time about it. And I really don't care. It's fun.
Now, speaking of some things that have come your way because of the fame and everything, how's your radio show going?
Actually, it's going very well. We've got, I think, 47 weeks that we've done this now. And you can't hardly name a poker star that hasn't been on it. We've had everybody from Hashem and Raymer and Chris Moneymaker, Helmuth, Manisau, whatever. Whenever something new is coming up, like Vanessa Russo is going to be on for a second time because she has a reality show coming up,
yeah.
And we're going to have a lot of other things out. It's all working well on it, and we're having a blast with it.
Now, where can people hear it?
You can go to the chipleader.com, which is a website of mine, and it's podcast on there, and we have the whole archive, so you can go through any of them you want to pick it out.
Okay.
If you want to hear what Daniel said or what Barry said or anything like that, go for it.
Excellent.
It's all in there. It's done at the local station there in St. Louis, 590 The Fan,
okay.
On it, KFNS on there. Listen to it if you want to. Listen to the download. Send me some emails. We'll have some fun.
Excellent. You and I met earlier this year in Tampa at the Parham Poker.
Yeah.
And now you're here for the Antioch Poker Championship, another charity event.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you play in charity events, and how rewarding has that been?
It's been really rewarding. It's one of the best things I do, I think. I'm actively involved in some aspect with about 20 charities in St. Louis area and around the country. And then I also do individual charity events. I just came from the Red Rock where I did one out there for cerebral palsy last weekend. I've got another one next weekend set up in St. Louis. Pretty much do them whenever I'm available on that. But it's so much fun. It's so rewarding. I did one with the Pujols Family Foundation, a couple of things there with them. And he helps with Down syndrome. And a little quick thing. One of the things he does down there, because these kids are sometimes excluded from a lot of things, like a prom, like a lot of the others, he and Dee, his wife, threw a prom for all those kids.
Wow.
They rented a ballroom down there. They had the whole thing. These kids got dressed up in the suits and the formal, and they had a blast. And he did two things there, which he'll never talk about, but he should. I walked up there, and Dee says, "You got to see this," and she grabs me, and she leads me around the corner, and there in the ballroom is 50 to 100 of these kids all on the dance floor, all mashing together. And in the center of this guy that's a foot and a half taller than any of the rest of them, laughing so hard he can't really stand up because they're all just having a blast with him and he's enjoying the heck out of it.
That is great.
And then later that night, they had a photo op there for all of the dates and that.
Right.
He sat there for hour after hour until every single kid that wanted a picture with him got it.
That's awesome.
Just unbelievable. The guy's a great guy.
Man, that's incredible. All right, so let's move on a little bit about poker.
Okay.
You had another incredibly deep run in 2009's main event.
Yeah.
And did you have to change your game at all because of the series before where everyone got to see you play and you did have to change it? So how did you do that? How did you still be so successful while changing a game so quickly like that?
What happens when you go on the tour and you're around there, your game better improve or you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And I played against some of the best of the world, and my game did improve. I play a much better game now than I did in 08 when I was there. Since I was recognized, well, I'll give you an example. On the first day, I had a camera crew follow me around to every table I was at that first day.
Yeah.
And everybody wanted to be on the camera. It made no difference what I had and what I bet. I guarantee I was getting called.
Jeez.
And it was a nightmare. That first day was nothing but survival. I laid down, I flopped a set of fives and laid it down. I had an ace-king of clubs pre-flop that I laid down. You had to. You know, you get five people, I don't care what hand you have, you know, you may be the best of the five, but you still only may be a 35% chance to win it. And those chips are too precious.
So how did you turn it to your advantage then?
Well, again, instant analysis at the table. Two things are the reactions I normally get. People are scared to play with me, or they want to push me out so that they can tell everybody about
it.
Those are the two extremes. You have to instantly be able to recognize those when you sit at a table.
Okay.
I hate it when my table gets bust. I sit down, I haven't seen any play at the table, and they deal you something like jacks.
Yeah.
And you got a pre-flop razor ahead of you, and that's like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Give me an hour, and I know how to handle it. But right now, it's a problem. But you have to almost instantly make a decision as to what type of a player and whether they're going to be that aggressive one that wants to take you down and throw over the 2-7, or is the guy that he has pocket aces and he's scared to raise you.
Yeah.
You know, because you have both of them.
Okay. How many people was it you brought out to the November 9 when you were at the final table?
346 people came out with me.
And now, what did that cost? Can you give me an idea of what that might have cost you?
No, I've never really told anybody what it cost. But we did hotel rooms. We did all the shirts, all the hats. A lot of people flew out on their own, but a lot of them, I did fly also. We rented McFadden's restaurant there for the weekend so they could go there anytime they wanted to eat or whatever. I rented shuttle buses, so we took them around different places that way. We went out and played golf afterwards, a whole group of us. We just had a blast, and I wouldn't change anything. I'm telling you, it was worth every penny of it.
Oh, my God, that's just incredible.
I didn't even know
about those things either. That's just oh, my God. All right, so how's your relationship going with PokerStars?
Very well. PokerStars is a quality act. They're the premier brand. They're the largest in the world. And they are an extremely ethical and forward-thinking company. I love it. I wouldn't trade them for anything. These guys will not do anything that's unethical. They're the ones that are pushing so hard for Washington to change it. They're asking them to regulate the industry so there can be no question, so everybody can feel comfortable sitting down and playing it and know that to the best of the ability of everybody on both sides, this is a fair game. That's what we want.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what they're pushing for very, very hard.
All right, my last question is, do you like any other games besides Hold'em? And what's your favorite game, if so?
I play a lot of the other games now, and I'm really getting addicted to some of them. Obviously, I like PLO and the different Omaha things.
Yeah.
Deuce to 7 triple draw can be so much fun.
Yeah.
And it is so sick.
It is. It's so frustrating.
It is. And then I found out the more I play Raz, the more strategy there is in Raz.
Yeah.
You know, it's a low ball game. It's, you know, supposedly real simple, right? No, it's not. There is a way to play Raz, and there is a skill to playing Raz.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been playing that quite a bit. The last couple of tournaments I've played, I finished third in one and fourth in the other one on it. And I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying the variety.
That's great.
Hold'em's my favorite, obviously.
Right.
But the others are fun to play.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
Hand of the Week this week comes all the way from London, Chris.
Awesome.
London, England. Across the pond. It's a tournament hand from our new friend Mike Conway, and he was actually playing on Christmas Eve, which I love. That some people just don't take the time off on Christmas Eve. Why not get a little game in there, right?
Exactly.
you know, get all day tomorrow, you know, watching the, you know, opening gifts and stuff. Let's go ahead and have some poker on Christmas Eve. he says, on his way home from work, stopped off the Empire Casino in London, and it's a 25-pound freeze-out. Now, of course, pounds are the currency over there, Chris. It's not a, you know, you can only be 25 pounds to enter the tournament.
I understand.
It'd be like a midget's playing. That'd be kind of fun.
I'm global. I understand. I've been to the across the pond. I know what a pound is.
All right, that's true. All right, 25-pound freeze out, the 5-pound bounty. So it's a bounty tournament, and starting exact size is 2,500 chips. It's playing 9-handed right now. It's the first level, the 2,550, and it's the fifth hand of the tournament. So very early on. Hard to have any reads here, I would imagine.
Right.
And it says the previous hands have been characterized as 3 to 4 limpers and a check by the big blind. Someone bets an urban fold. So got a little information on the first four hands. So,
okay. Seems like everybody's just feeling out the table right now. And...
exactly. Feeling out, seeing what's going on. All right. He still has a starting check of 2,500 and it's under the gun plus one. The under the gun folds. And he looks down at King of Hearts, King of Diamonds.
Very nice. Do you want some analysis?
Just see where you're going to go there.
The kings were first introduced to poker back in the early 1100s when they were using King Henry as their model for the... okay. All right, so we got King of Hearts, King of Diamonds. We're very happy. We're under the gun. We're going to start opening up this table and getting it out of the muck, and we're going to raise. Yeah,
exactly. All right, what are we raising to?
Well, we're going to have to make it 3X. I think it's under the gun, maybe 2.5X because you want some action, but I think I'm happy with making it 3X here. So what were the blinds?
2550.
Yeah, so I'll make it one. I'll make it 150.
All right, I'm gonna 2-2, and you want to be cautious with these kings. I don't want to get too excited early in the tournament with them.
No,
is what I'm thinking.
Not yet,
particularly in this bad a situation. But I'll make our standard raise, and we'll see what happens. Right?
Yep.
All right. Our hero bets 150. We get a folder, and then the who will be the villain in the hand raises to 300, and has 2400 behind. And it is folded back around to us, Chris, so we are heads up, and we have to decide whether we want to call or raise here.
Well, I never call in this situation because I'm out of position. I want to take the hand now or define it. I mean, the third raise is always kings or aces, so we're going to make the third raise here and let them know we have kings or aces, and then we'll know. So I'm happy to – and he only min-raised us, so
yep.
I'm happy to make it 800 or 900 now, more, and see what happens. I'm not going to shove, but, you know, because that's still less than 50% of my stack. So, but there's no way I'm just calling here. I'm not folding. You know, fifth hand, he could be have anything. So,
all right, exactly.
Just call, I'm scared if an ace comes. I'm out of position. I'm scared if an ugly board comes, you know, or coordinated board when I mean ugly. So,
right.
I have to re-raise here, right? I mean, I have to make it a 800 or 900 to go.
Yeah, I agree, and here's where I really don't like to get kings in a bad position early in a tournament like this, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because here's the situation. We got a 2,500 starting stack, right? We put 150 in. That's nothing, right?
Right.
We can call 150, like you said, but we got a raise here. So when you raise, how much are you going to raise considering how much you got behind? And it's going to be an interesting hand that's going to develop here, I think. So you're going to raise to what, 900, you said?
Yeah, 8 or 9. And, you know, because at that point, I still have 1,400, 1,500 in my stack. And if he calls me, then I can make a pot-sized bet and maybe push him off of his queens or jacks or ace-king or something. So I still have enough, I think, that he can fold if he calls me and we see a flop. If he re-raises all in, I can't fold. I mean, it's kings. You right. know, it's a 25-pound tournament. It's not the 10,000-pound main event Europe. You know what I mean? So...
very true. Very true.
I'm gonna have to re-raise to 800 or 900 and see what happens. But I'm dying to know what he did.
All right. Well, he's gonna call, Chris.
Oh. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, if it's a safe flop, I don't mind the call, but I'm gonna get it in there anyway.
Yeah. You know, I guess here's the case I can make for calling, and I think I'm with you. I'm gonna raise, but I can make a case for calling because it's early in the tournament. I'm out of position with the kings. If I call here and the flop comes good, which it probably will. You know, maybe I'll check and let this guy take a stab and then raise then or something like that. I don't know. But or if an ace comes, then I can slow down and not put so much in. But,
yeah.
You know, so I can see a reason for it, but I'm still raising pre-flop.
So he just calls. So what's the flop?
Yeah, the pot is 675 now, and we get a flop of ace of spades, 10 of clubs, 6 of hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I mean, even if he was doing that move at Queens, you know, you're out of position now.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you bet and represent the ace, and then if he shoves, then what do you do? Then you have to lay your hand down, and you lost even more money. Whereas you'd probably have your answer, or at least get to see all five cards, if he had re-raised. That's how I feel. I mean, you know, who am I? I go out with jacks versus king queen off. I'm probably gonna have to check here. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't see any difference between this and having pocket tens and getting re-raised and calling and having a jack come on the flop and or a king. You know, I mean, you would probably still check there too. I mean, there's an over. I mean, unless you're positive this guy has something under your kings and you can represent the ace, I'm probably checking here because any bet I make, you know, any significant bet into a $600 pot is 300 to 400 or 500. So, I mean, that's, you know, going to get me down to 1,000 anyway. So, I don't know. No, I guess not. If I only called 300, then I still have 2,000. So, I don't know. I mean, I suppose we could make a stab, and if we get re-raised, let it go. So, if I made a stab, there's only 600 in the pot, I might bet 400 and see what happens. And then if he comes over the top, then I can let it go and say, hey, you know what, it's still early. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Here's the thing. With the ace now, my king's really shriveled up now because, you know, he got raised pre-flop. We just called. And now the ace came. It's early in the tournament. We don't know how people play. You know, I know the nation's probably going to skewer me over this, but I'm fine, you know, if I have to lay this hand down. I might just check here and see what he does. And, you know, if he checks behind, then I'm emboldened. You know, if he puts out a healthy bet, then, you know, maybe I just smuck and see what comes the next hand. I mean, it's early, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's go back for a minute now. We call the 300. We have 2,200 left. If we bet right. 400 and he raises us, we still have 1,800 left, and we can let the hand go. Yeah. I feel like we had That's some true. Aggression, and we called. I feel like we could probably try to get away with taking one of those quick stabs at it, and if he just calls, then I don't know what I do on the turn. But if he re-raises, then I know where I am. If he calls, then I'm a little nervous. So, but I feel like we have to do something here. I feel like just checking just totally gives up with kings, and
That's true.
I'm not really ready to do that yet. So let's try 400.
All right. That sounds good. Unfortunately, our hero checks.
Okay.
And the villain checks behind, though.
Well, that's kind of weird. I mean, a lot of times on TV, well, you know, if you're watching the final table of the World Poker Tour and somebody has an ace and they flop an ace, the pros always check the ace.
Right.
So I'm not saying this guy's a pro he's playing against, but that does happen. But initially, if this guy's not that kind of level, whatever, it feels like he's afraid of the ace too. So I don't know. But he could be trapping us too. You know,
yeah, and you know, it's a you know, a fairly safe board to be checking that ace too if that's what you want to do. I mean, there's not a flush draw, there's a straight draw, obviously.
Right.
With the but that would assume, you know, having a king, queen, king, jack, something like that. Who plays those hands? So
evening.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a situation where you could check your ace and then the hope that your opponent makes a stab at it on the turn and then boom, you nail him.
Yeah.
But all right, the turn is the king of spades. So that gives us the board of ace of spades, ten of clubs, six of hearts, king of spades, and our hero says, "Cue Chris, bingo, bango, bongo."
Oh man, you know I can already tell what's going to happen in this hand. That was the one thing, was the check is fishy from this guy. If he's got pocket aces, and that's why he doesn't have to bet. It sounds like it's going to be set over set. I mean, it just feels like it. But yeah, we're going to lose all our money on this hand.
Well, here's the thing too. Our hero does recognize, of course, that the possible straight is out there now, and that a flush draw has developed too. So I think he's being at least cognizant of the danger Will Robinson with this beautiful turn card. But nonetheless, we have to do something here. And what are you going to do, Chris?
Well, I'm going to bet probably the pot, or maybe a little less than the pot, maybe 3/4 of the pot. And if he's got ace king, which would be awesome,
right?
You know, the case king just came out, and you know, we're gonna get paid off. But if this guy's got a set of aces, there's nothing we can do. So we might as well bet 3/4 of the pot. And if there's no way this guy re-raised with queen jack or king queen or queen jack or yeah, there's just no way queen jack. So that's the only thing we're afraid of really is queen jack or a set of aces. So we've narrowed it down to two hands that can beat us. One of them's likely, the other one's unlikely, so it's 50-50. I'll bet three quarters and lose another coin flip.
All right, yeah. I'll bet black, you can bet red. How's that? All right, our hero bets 600, which is just shy of the pot, and the villain min raises to 1,200.
Wow. Wow, well, the min raise only tells us that he probably has the nuts. It's either the nuts or he's got aces, because, you know, what can he min raise with there, you know, without the nuts or the second nuts, right? What could he min raise with there? Pocket tens?
Right.
Maybe? Oh, man. Well, we got three kings. We can't fold. I don't think we could fold a set of kings here yet. We don't even know how this guy plays, so I would just call.
Yeah, yeah. Not for 600 more, we can't fold. So he says he's at the point where he thinks the possible hands are ace-ace, ace-king, 10-10. Possible, but less likely is ace-10, 6-6, and very unlikely queen-queen, jack-jack.
Right.
And he had ruled out the queen-jack or king-10 on the re-raise before the flop. So it sounds like he's doing a good analysis here, and he calls. The pot's now 3,075. The river is the 9 of spades, so a final board of ace of spades, 10 of clubs, 6 of hearts, king of spades, 9 of spades.
Well, I don't think the guy has a flush. I don't think he min raises with a flush draw. There's no reason to do that. So flush is out of my mind. Broadway's out of my mind. Really just one hand beats us, and I the way it was played, it makes sense that's what he has. He re-raised us, and we were under the gun plus one, so he had to give us quality hand. He re-raised us pre-flop. He checked a monster on the flop because he couldn't be afraid of anything there. Min raised us on the turn, hoping this guy had kings.
Right.
You know, it just feels like pocket aces, but if it's not pocket aces, I'm putting them on pocket tens.
But
it feels so much like pocket aces. It's sickening.
Does, doesn't it?
Oh, it's nauseating.
Oh, it really does. All right, so our hero says he has no experience with this player, and he's not sure what his range is, but he's run into people who play ace-x or suited connectors all the way to showdown. He feels that if he bets, he's only going to get called by hands that will beat me. I tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
So he checks. The villain bets 800. If we make the call, that leaves us with 200 behind. Our hero figures he's up against ace-ace or 10-10 at this point, so exactly where you thought.
Yeah.
And so there's no reason to throw those last 200 in, right?
Well, the blinds are 25 and 50. You got 4 blinds left. Yeah, I guess I could just call here and put it all in with any paint.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, the option here is either the fold, which at this point the pot's so big that
there's no
you
way.
Got one hand that could beat you, you can't fold it. And there's no reason to throw those extra 200 in, I don't think. I mean, just make the call on the 800 to see if the 200 in case you're wrong, and maybe you can those chip under the napkin rallies and win the World Series.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you still got 4 blinds left. You know, 25-50, and you got 200. So you got 4 blinds left. Anything could happen. You double up or triple up once, and you know you got some breathing room. You got your M up to a respectable level, and then get it all in again with another hand, and maybe you get back to starting stack. So yeah, I guess I could just call there. Oh man, it's a crying call though.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, and that's exactly what he says. He makes a crying call with only 200 left. The villain shows ace of clubs. Ace of hearts.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, it makes total sense. The story totally makes sense, but you're in denial. You've got a set of kings. You know, what are the odds? You're just in denial there. You have to grin and just bear it, man. It's a grain of salt there.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Well, in the post-log in the email, he says, I guess I made the mistake of making the final call. But here the other thing, Mike, is I don't think you made a mistake there.
No, really, you ruled out Broadway, you ruled out a flush. There's only 2 hands that are even make sense there now, and one of them is pocket tens that you beat, and the other one isn't. So it's a 50-50 call, and you're getting more than 2-1 on your money. So you have to make the call there.
Yeah, he says the other people at the table thought it was amazing that he could keep any of his chips, and you know, I don't know if that's the right thing to say. I mean, once it got that deep into the hand, I guess it is. But, you know, you probably couldn't have gotten away from these kings early on if you really felt bad about being out of position.
Yeah, I mean, the re-raise pre-flop would have maybe gotten your answer. If the kid wasn't sneaky about it and shoved, then you either think about it, and maybe you can lay him down there, or you get it all in and, you know, whatever. But and then the turn, though, I mean, then the flop, I mean, the flop was, you know, his check behind was what got us involved because... And he flops a set of aces, and it seems like he's afraid of the ace rather than a monster. So, You know, it's tough. It's really tough to but that min raise on the turn really seemed to give it away.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Mike, we appreciate you sending the hand, and we also appreciate your warm comments on the Chicago show. He says he was on the train listening to it, Chris, and when you were telling the story about making the exit on the U-turn ramp, he laughed so hard he got a number of looks from the people on the train.
I don't want to get anybody beaten up on the tube. You know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Look at it. Now we're influencing cancer treatments. We're getting people beat up on the trains, man. We got to get the pillow down here, I think. But, yeah. All right, Mike, we appreciate you sending it in, and send us your address, and we will send you a lovely set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. And everyone else, if you want some swag, email those hands of the week to podcast@anteupmagazine.com.
I want to thank Dennis Phillips, PokerStars Team Pro, for spending some time with me in Chicago and answering my questions. Always a generous guy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
And, all right, now, hold on, man. I'm sorry. I think my cat got out of the house. Hold on.
Okay.
Can you stop it and
record? Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm sorry, man. Hold on.